Now broadcasting the webcomic beacon.
Hello and welcome to episode 133 of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. I'm Fess of TooManyThingsToList.com. And with me we have my two wonderful assistants, co-hosts. We have Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com.
Well, hello there.
And on time, actually early for once, Tanya Higgins of DaisiesAndShit.com.
You know, that's going to stop happening if you're going to give me crap about it.
I'm not giving you crap. I'm applauding.
Hello, everyone.
You showed up early. Yeah, yeah.
And
I feel like I'm giving cookies. It's like positive reinforcement for normal behavior. That's sad.
For expected behavior. Yeah. Anywho, and this week we have a special guest on. Well, when are our guests never special? Well, that one. But anyway, so we we have Gordon. Let's see if I get this right. McAlpin.
Yes.
Of Multiplex. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good to be here.
It is Labor Day weekend. Labor Day is tomorrow, and. Why are we all here on the internet when we could be outside grilling?
I blame you.
I just woke up.
It's 11 a.m. here, so the grilling might happen later.
Yeah, well, perhaps a matinee. Anything good going on out this weekend?
The American with George Clooney.
Oh, yeah, the American looks pretty good, actually. I'm kind of interested in it. I do get a little... I do have to roll my eyes that, you know, the premise is this hitman type or weapons dealer guy, and he's like hiding out, and the only two people he can connect with are a prostitute and a priest. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But it is George Clooney. He tends to produce good roles for himself.
Like Clooney. I used to think, oh, he's just that TV actor, like the guys from Friends. They're in a movie, and you're like, no. But then every time I would go to a George Clooney movie, I'd walk out thinking, Clooney!
Yeah. he did kind of have a rocky start, what with Batman and the Peacemaker and some other, kind of so-so movies. But he started picking up at some point. And he directs pretty good movies, too. I really liked both Confessions of a Dangerous Mind and the more recent one.
Did he do Good Night and Good Luck?
Yes, that was him. So
he directed that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He's kind of the Cary Grant of our time, or so they say.
I think he would be if he did more... movies, more decent movies. Maybe one halfway good romantic comedy, because that one he did with Michelle Pfeiffer wasn't all bad.
That last one, what was it? The one where he's flying around all the airports all the time. That one.
Oh, Up in the Air. Yeah.
Yeah, he was really good in that. It was. Yeah.
I wouldn't call that a romantic comedy, though.
No. You need to do some screwball comedy. That's what you need to do.
His Coen Brothers movies are kind of almost screwball comedies.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So if you haven't guessed by now, this is yet another one of those episodes where we have somebody on and it's an excuse to talk about movies or talk about something else that's not webcomics like we did with Doctor Who several episodes ago, several hundred episodes. Oh, no. Somewhere in the
Every
archives. Go look for it.
Every episode I'm on.
we should talk about Multiplex at multiplexcomic.com.
But when you talk about Multiplex, you're really just talking about movies.
Well, and workers, you know.
It's true.
The people working in the movie theater. And I do have to take a look at this because you know you have over 500 comics right now.
Yep.
But when you click number one, when you click the first, wow, art is incredibly different. And the title of the first one is called "I'm Sorry." Almost, I'm sorry that the art looks this bad at the beginning of the comic. It's kind of
yeah,
funny.
Yeah. The art was a little rough around the edges early on. What can I say? I was trying to do this this kind of 2D, you know, cut paper animation style thing, sort of drawn from Flash animation, but also, you know, equally inspired by actual cut paper animation. And I stuck to that a little too slavishly at first. Eventually, I either just started getting bored with it, or I started kind of changing it up a little bit more to make it more. More just kind of standard vector illustration. Mm. And some of that was also just developments in the technology that I had access to. You know, when Illustrator CS4 came out, there was they added a new feature called the blob brush, and that let me much more effectively than before draw like almost hand drawn elements with my Cintiq. So I could, you know, make the shapes and lines in it look a little bit more natural. And I think that helped a lot. And some of it's just, you know, learning how to do things. Like the art was very stiff at first, and it still is, you know, a little bit, you know, a little stiff. I feel like I can improve that. But, you know, just learning how to warp the figures and skew them and stuff in ways that make them look more dynamic has really helped, I think. Plus, just building up a library of all these different characters, all these different poses and stuff, you can you can get it, you know, you can make the art look different in every panel as opposed to repeating the same panel over and over. Like I did a little too much for probably the first year and half or so. But yeah, the art has improved some substantially, I hope, since the very first strip. And the first customer in that first strip, I just wish I could just redraw that one. But I don't, because I feel
George
like
George Lucas. It.
I actually make a comment about that in the book. I've got you know, the first Multiplex print collection coming out really soon. It's called Multiplex Enjoy Your Show. It collects the first 102 strips, and below the first one, I say if I want to go all George Lucas on this, I would redraw this customer. But I, you know, I wanted to leave it somewhat honest, even if I did fix up some other things, like coloring wise and kind of making the layouts look closer to the more recent strips or the later strips. I mean, I only switched over to it to the 4:3 aspect ratio for the standard panels after like 7 or 8 strips anyway. So like the square panels that I started with, you know, I just changed those for the collection because they just wouldn't fit in a book otherwise. Mm-hmm. But I adopted the 4:3 aspect ratio because it's the same aspect ratio as a TV screen. Because the whole idea is that even though a multiplex is inspired by movies, it's really kind of, in my opinion, it's kind of like a sitcom on your computer screen. And so when I do things like have a repeated panel, it's the idea is that it's continuing a shot. I just think I overused that. You know, like six panels straight of the same shot with just with just different character, you know, different expressions on the characters and poses on the characters. It gets monotonous, I think. So I make a point to not do that for more than, you know, 3 or 4 panels straight ever. Anymore. I don't know. Anyway. You were
that
saying?
Makes good sense. He doesn't.
Okay. Wow, you just kind of just went. But, okay, so.
That's good.
Yeah.
Like it.
I can talk.
It's better than trying to pull teeth with some guests, but yeah. Let's see. So you have, I'm guessing, okay, You had a Kickstarter a while back, and I'm going to guess the name of your book changed name since then, correct?
Not exactly. When it first started, I was just calling it Multiplex Book 1, the Club of Awesome, which is what I called the Kickstarter project, was always just a reference to the Kickstarter backers.
Okay.
So the book was never going to be called Club of Awesome. It was always going to be, you know, Multiplex Book 1 or something like that. And I eventually decided to drop the Book 1 from the actual title, just because, you know, Multiplex Book 1, Enjoy Your Show starts to sound more like Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, you know? So I just called it Multiplex Enjoy Your Show. And it's not just Enjoy Your Show, because there's also a novel, apparently, called Enjoy Your Show about people that work at a movie theater that I've never heard of, and which is out of, or that I'd never heard of until I, you know, Googled the title, and it's out of print and whatnot. But I just wanted that extra distinction. Plus, you know, having the title of the webcomic and the title of the book helps keep it.
And probably all the pictures in it help give it away.
Yeah. You know, nobody's going to confuse my Multiplex with a novel. Mm. Well, maybe. There's a few wordy strips.
The novelization. I did notice you also have like a couple of other issues. It looks like you basically, you know, like they're like floppy comics.
Right.
I'm guessing.
There are five chapter ebooks. I released the first one as like a print-on-demand floppy comic, just because people wanted them.
Mm-hmm.
I only ever made like 40 of those, and I hate, like, I have to preface this with saying that I come from a print background. I've worked for book publishers and such for probably a good 10 years, so I hate print on demand.
Oh, did we lose them? Did I lose everybody? Uh-oh.
TalkShoe has kinks, to say the
least. Yeah, we have the same issues.
I stopped using TalkShoe, so yeah, we're back, by the way. We had a little problem. My internet will sometimes cut out. We don't know why. And we thought we fixed it and whatever. So I need to apologize to chats. So we won't be live.
But it was a great show!
Yeah!
Sorry you couldn't hear it!
But I will get the show out today. I will work to get it out today. So anyway, Gordon, you're saying you come from a print background?
Oh, okay. We can just back up and you can conveniently edit or whatever. But I come from a print background. So you know, being familiar with the whole printing ordeal, I just don't like the quality of print-on-demand comics. So the floppy comics that I produced of like the first, I think, two chapter ebooks were just kind of throwaway, you know, promotional sorts of things.
Okay.
There were five chapter ebooks. Each of those is, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 32 to 36 pages, and they were kind of like a precursor to the print collection, in that I was, you know, laying the book out, adding additional content in order to fill in the gaps in the pages that mm-hmm. would arise from the different lengths of the strips that I do. People familiar with Multiplex will know that early on, especially, this length of the strips changed wildly from, you know, week to week or update to update. Just because, you know, I'm on the internet, I can make a strip, you know, four panels or 12 panels or whatever if I want to. And I don't see any reason not to do that. Or I didn't see any reason not to do that until I had to create a book.
Yeah.
And now I don't necessarily, you know, do the strip a fixed size. I just am more conscious of how they're going to break apart into pages. So anyway, on the early strips, there would be these gaps in the page, or, you know, I'd have a three-tier comic that would be, you know, broken into two pages because of you know, the page turn. And so what I would do is I would add either two panels or four panels or whatever to push any strips down so that the page breaks worked better. That's where the chapter ebooks came from. I also, in some cases, wanted to just expand on the narrative, because when Multiplex started, it was once a week, and then it's later switched to two and sometimes three strips a week. And you can do so much more with two or three updates a week that you can't do with just one. Adding an extra strip in here and there in order to, you know, smooth over things, talk about movies that I, you know, wasn't able to talk about before because I was sidelined by, some teen drama or whatever. Mm-hmm. That was the whole idea of doing all the bonus strips. Plus, it also, you know, it was just a reason for people to pick up the ebooks. And for people who don't pick up the ebooks, all of those strips are also in the print collection, along with another 12-page story about Revenge of the Sith, actually, which is why I used that as an example earlier. So there's a lot of new content in the book for people who aren't, so gung-ho about the strip that they'll pick up the ebooks. I know I personally don't care for ebooks that much, or not of comics anyway, because, you're already reading it on your screen. What's the difference? but if you don't read the ebooks, there's like 40 pages of new comics in the 220 page collection. So I think it's a pretty good incentive for people who like print comics to pick up the collection.
This episode brought to you by I gotta ask, where are you getting your book printed?
My book was printed by Jostens, actually, the high school yearbook company. I was referred to them by Tom Brazelton, who of Theater Hopper, who printed his books there, and they did a pretty good job with his. Their prices were just really competitive compared to any other North American or Canadian printer that I came across. They were just slightly higher than any Chinese printing company that I had gotten a quote from. As in just slightly higher being like, $2,000, but, in the grand scheme of things, it's a fair amount considering you're not waiting 3 months to have your books shipped across the Pacific. Yeah. I'm really happy with the results, I probably could have gotten slightly more consistent, ink coverage. Sorry if I'm getting a little technical. Somebody that printed only comics or almost entirely comics, like Transcon, for instance. Like they have a whole division that specializes in comics, and I do think that they might have been able to produce even better results. Their quotes were like $4,000 higher, I think, than Jostens was. And at the quantities that I'm doing, my print run is 1,500 copies.
Is that like kind of a low quantity for these other places you were looking at, or?
Transcon, I think their prices would start to get a little competitive in the 3,000-4,000 unit range.
Okay.
But for 1,500 copies, there were some companies that didn't do less than 2,000, and I was like, well, can't use you, because at that point, I didn't know if I was gonna have a distributor, and I did find a distributor. I don't know how well my distributor is gonna do as far as getting the book out there.
So you're getting it distributed as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's going to be hopefully distributed nationwide. I mean, I know they've already got a pre-order listing at barnesandnoble.com, which, they're undercutting me, so I don't want to talk about that too much.
can we ask who this distributor is?
The distributor is Small Press United. They're a division of the Independent Publishers Group.
Okay.
They're one of the few large book distributors that will work with first-time publishing companies. And they seem to have pretty good standards as far as not just taking every book that that people ask them to distribute. Their IPG, their parent company, they're a really good operation, I think. And so SPU, Small Press United, has all of their resources and connections in order to get Multiplex into you know, Ingram and hopefully Diamond, and a few other wholesalers in the U.S. and Canada, and you know, maybe outside of that as well. I think a lot of it will depend on whether a lot of the success of the book will depend on whether Diamond picks up the book, and I think that's pretty likely. At least a small quantity at first, because I mean, you know, it's a well-produced book, if I may say so myself. you know, I've got a quote from Brian O'Malley on the back cover, Brian Lee O'Malley, I should say.
Yep. Oops. We can probably talk more about that later.
Yeah. We can absolutely talk about Scott Pilgrim. It was a great movie. you know, and I'm working the press angle as much as I possibly can.
Right.
I do have limited advertising budget. So that might slow things down. But you know, another thing that I think SPU's experience will help with is actually getting the book to not just be a front-loaded book where, you know, everybody orders their copies and then, you know, 6 months later, nobody's buying it. Their books are, you know, routinely small press. So obviously, because it's in their name. So they're kind of familiar with the long tail business model,
right,
where, you know, you might start at a certain level and then as press actually comes out, you know, they'll get them into more and more stores because of that. So I think they were a really good choice. Remains to be seen. And, you know, if in 6 months I think that I could do better on my own, then I'll probably cancel the agreement. But so far, I think they're doing a great job. So, you know, let's not talk about that.
the print-on-demand stuff is basically, it's basically photocopied. It's basically
right, exactly. That's my big problem with it is because they're high-end photocopiers, you know,
yeah,
or laser printers.
They're very, very good photocopies, but...
Yeah. I mean, they're like... I mean, a print-on-demand place will probably have like a $15,000 copier. Or if they don't, they should. I've worked at, you know, printing companies that do need fairly high-end copiers in their offices because they're printing, you know, hundreds of pages a day or thousands of pages in a day, and so they're similar to the machines, maybe a little lower end, of course, but essentially like the actual printer portion of the machine is the same sort of thing that a print on demand company would use, and they can get great results. The thing is, you need to maintain those things really, really well to get consistent great results out of them. And I don't feel that that's something that a lot of print-on-demand companies really care that much about.
Well, since we have you, and I did want to do like a sort of thing on printing at some point in the future. I think since you're right in the middle of this process, a lot of this information is very useful for some of our listeners. Of course, I will remind us, many of our listeners, that. Multiplex has an actual audience, though, so it's a little bit more
unlike
warranted.
My comic or most people. So.
It's a mid level, I guess. It's a B list comic.
You don't run out and do a 1,500 book print run, right, if your mom and grandma read it fairly regularly,
yeah,
and have assured you that other people will just love it, dear.
Yeah, my grandma's dead, so I don't even get feedback from her.
There go half your sales.
That's not good at all. Don't take the advice of family and friends. Take actual readership into account.
I was initially planning on doing a 1,000 copy print run, which I felt confident that I could sell at conventions and online within a year or so. You know, when people balked at the initial cover price that I was aiming for, which was $25, even though it's, you know, an oversized 224-page full-color book, I decided to, you know, do a little survey and see, you know, get some idea of how many people would actually be interested in picking this thing up. And I got enough responses and, you know, cross-referenced that with how big I think my audience is, because nobody ever really knows. And I felt confident that I could do, you know, the extra 500 in order to get the price down, and keep it low enough that I could, you know, get a distributor, which was part of the plan from the beginning. And, you know, even if I didn't find a distributor, it just means that you have more of a profit margin per book when you sell them directly. You know, you know, when you buy something from you know, at a low when you have a small print run and your book costs $12 and you try to sell it for $20, you can't sell it through a distributor because they need like a 60% cover price discount. It was I don't know what I was going to say there. it's tricky figuring out a print run, but okay. Fingers crossed, I think I can get through the 1500 copy run and maybe even do a second run if things go well with the distributor. You know, I mean, I've already sold maybe 500 books between Kickstarter and the pre-orders and the initial order from my distributor, and that's, you know, that initial order is mostly just to get copies into salesmen's hands.
Right.
Right.
So about 500 is. I wanted to ask about Kickstarter real quick. How much did you? Hang on 1 second.
Save.
Yes. Okay. So, how much did you end up raising with the Kickstarter program? And through Kickstarter, how many books were, quote unquote, ordered? Kinda.
I think something like 250 something books were pre-ordered essentially through the Kickstarter thing. You know, there were 150 something people that only pledged enough to just get the book, and then there were, you know, more people or a few other people anyway that wanted a t-shirt on top of that or a sketch on top of that,
right?
You know, at the higher level of rewards, but about 250, I'd say, were pre-ordered through the Kickstarter project, which actually launched a year ago and ended last December. So, I mean, these people were really generous in saying, yes, I want a copy of the book a year away, a year away from when there's any chance of it actually being in my hands.
During that time or after that, did you do any pre-orders on the site itself?
Yeah, I'm doing a pre-order through the website right now, and that's largely just so I can get all of the orders ready before the 22nd, because I didn't want to get hit with, you know, 100 pre-orders in one day or 100 orders in one day and then have to ship them all out as quickly as possible. And also because after running through all, you know, $13,000 of the Kickstarter, actually it was a little less than that after Amazon payments took its cut, but after, you know, $12,000, something like that anyway. I'm basically spent on all of that money. Yeah. You know, the print run, you know, it sucked up, you know, three quarters of it, of course. And then all of the Kickstarter pledge rewards and shipping on the books pretty much more than ate up the rest of it, actually. So, you know, I'm still pouring a little bit of my own money into it.
A little or a lot? I kind of wanted to ask, like, are you, compared to the Kickstarter, do you still have to put in your own significant amount into this, or?
I mean, you know, a few thousand dollars. but the big expense for me was my living expenses starting from February until now. I essentially had no income from anything else other than advertising revenue and sales through the store and that sort of thing. And, you know, Multiplex isn't big enough to really sustain me as a full-time cartoonist.
Not buying any caddies.
So I'm so I'm really poor right now. But
so go to multiplexcomic.com and pre-order your copy today.
Please do.
We actually have to take a quick break, so I can save this file and start up another one. And
save.
So we'll be right back.
Have news, questions, comments, or advertising inquiries? Transmit them to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or dial 1-320-310-0922.
it's just that positive reinforcement. That's your cookie. Good job.
It's your cookie. Let's see here. What can you looked at Transcontinental because obviously you're looking at offset printing. What are some other companies that you kind of looked at?
There were a couple of companies in China that I was leaning towards. Can't remember offhand right now. Let me try to look it up real quick.
Because I don't think a lot of people entirely know where to go for offset printing.
101 Color gave me a really good quote. They're a Chinese company that has an office in San Francisco. The woman that was actually helping me kind of figure out what specs I wanted to use in the book, Penny, she was really helpful, and I felt sort of bad that when I was basically running 2 months behind schedule on the book, and I still wanted to make it at least a September, you know, availability date, I had to switch to a different company in order to make that date, you know, and so I felt kind of bad not using them, but I do think that they would have done a good job. Their samples were great as well. And there were, Regal Printing as well was another one. They were pretty experienced in publishing books for DC and other, you know, other large printing companies. So they gave me a really good quote as well. I'd say those two and Transcon were really the only ones that I seriously considered. There were a few others that I got quotes from that I was just like, I can't afford this. And then once I found Jostens and their quote was, you know, better than any other US or Canadian printer, and not quite as good as the Chinese printers, but close. You know, it just seemed like a natural choice because, you know, getting the books in a month after I gave them files versus 3 months later, you know, makes a big difference.
Watching your con season slowly tick away while you're waiting for your books. Yeah.
I'm pretty much just getting the tail end of the con season right now. And, you know, and I do kind of wish that I could have gone to, you know, Baltimore or a couple of other ones. But, you know, I'm getting to New York Comic Con, and that's, I think, second largest convention in the country.
Pretty good.
So that's good enough, I think. And then, you know, in the spring, I'll start it up with wave two of the convention push at Emerald City.
Oh, nice. And I think part of the lesson here is to not rein yourself in to people that just print comic books or just print, you know, graphic novels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I never would have thought of a
can
of
print year things. it doesn't so much matter.
Jostens doesn't really advertise its small press or small run printing business very well. I went to their website and I couldn't find it. Eventually, you know, Tom sent me a link and I you know did it through there. But you know, when you think about it, it makes total sense. The bulk of their business is done printing yearbooks, and all of the yearbooks come out at basically the same time. Mm-hmm. So they have these massive printers, or presses that you know are running out just kajillions of yearbooks at basically one time of the year. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of the year, it would actually probably cost them less money to just keep the presses running for the entire rest of the year than it would to shut them down and then start them back up again.
There's servicing involved in that. You can't leave printers not running.
There's a ton of servicing that's involved with that. And so by just, you know, farming it out at apparently a ridiculously cheap rate, you know, it works.
Could you, for that particular link, if it's still active, could you send it to us so we could put it in our show notes?
Yeah, I'll see if I can track it down.
Okay,
and
cool.
I'll send it to you.
That would be good.
Yeah, because you never know. Some people out there, you know, they can't
and
afford some
they,
offset
they
printing.
Even smaller runs than mine. I mean, I know that the per unit cost wasn't as good, but you know, they gave me quotes for I think 750 and 1,000 as well.
Which again, makes sense with the yearbook thing. You know, not every My high school graduating class was 350, but
right.
There's somebody at work who his high school graduating class was 14.
We're like a year pamphlet, though.
Yeah. They combined junior high and high school and did it all in one yearbook. But still, you know, it was still a fairly small run, 700 to 800 books. So
class of 96 monograph.
Exactly. So yeah, you know, you know that they have to be flexible, you know,
yeah.
in their print run sizes. So that's an intriguing thought. Is the yearbook
thing. Yeah,
and these are full color in the whole nine yards, right?
Yeah. Well, mine is. I know that you know you can. They'd probably be even better for black and white because you know black and white printing is so much easier to do, and it. With multiplex, I mean, you know, the art is entirely vector drawn. I don't use black lines to hold everything in. So if the registration is just slightly off, like it is all the time when you have color printing, it's just a fact of, you know, it's physics. You know, it's just going to slip a tiny bit. You know, if it's just slightly off, you get a page that kind of looks a little bit fuzzier than the rest of them. And, you know, a lot of the books that I've got do have that on a few pages. It's unavoidable. It's not, you know, some egregious thing. And a lot of people aren't going to notice it besides me.
Yeah.
So
it is kind of a print guy thing.
Right.
I've noticed.
Right.
I've seen people take apart a book and like, oh, and look here, and look here. Things I never would have seen on my own.
Right. So, I mean, there are definitely pages where the registration is dead on and it looks perfectly crisp. As if you know, as if it was one of the prints that I print out for my inkjet. But you know, that kind of color, that kind of registration across 1,500 books with 224 pages, it doesn't happen perfectly every time.
Yeah.
So you know, with black only, obviously there's no registration involved. You just need to make sure that the ink is solid.
Right.
So,
right.
So yeah. I don't know. I would definitely recommend them for anybody, just at least to get a quote from, for anybody that wants to publish a, you know, a short run.
And I think that's actually another good point. I've known people who, you know, would talk to one person at a convention because they really liked their book and just go with them. Just because they had a good recommendation and they saw one product that they thought was acceptable, right. Run off and just buy it. Meanwhile, they had a local printer right in town
right,
that would have
right.
done it for half the price,
oh,
half the time, and you
wow.
know, in some cases even helped with distribution. And you know, it's worth, I don't know, I think it's worth a couple $1,000 to sit on my butt for a couple of hours and make a few phone calls.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, call around and most places will send you samples. Even if you have to pay for shipping, that's going to be worth it. You know,
right.
spend, even if you have to spend $20 in, you know, in shipping costs to get samples, look mm-hmm. around, make sure you know what you're doing, make sure you know what they're doing. And don't just take one little word of advice and run off and do it. So what worked for one person may not work for you.
So. I mean, you know, I've heard people get bad results out of, I won't name them, but a very large printing company that specializes
yeah.
in comics that we've actually mentioned earlier in the show.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, I mean, things like upside down pages, missing pages, that kind of thing. These things happen. It's not, you know, just because somebody gets good results doesn't mean that's really indicative of their work.
Right.
Just because somebody gets bad results doesn't mean it's indicative of that company's work either. You know, things happen. But, you know, things like that happening are things that you shouldn't be paying for.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, as long as you get somebody that's willing to work with you, that's very communicative and, you know, at least has some decent samples.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I actually found that I don't think I would have thought of without talking to other small press people. When I called around to local printers, I asked them, because I'm doing much smaller print runs of traditional comic books,
mm-hmm.
where advertising is very common in comic books. We've all seen it. I asked the printers, do you offer a discount if I give you ad space? Right. And I was astonished by how much that dropped the price. Astonished. So it's worth asking. And a couple of the companies that I asked about actually then sent me 4 or 5 ads that I could choose from as far as their advertisement. So I picked one that worked well with my comics, and it dropped the price in my case by almost $1 a print.
Yeah.
Which was nice. I don't mind that at all. So ask questions and call around and make sure that...
Absolutely. You know, especially with this economy, there's no sense in not shopping around. I do have, since we're talking about printing and stuff...
Just kill the room?
No, why not? Why not just keep on going? You have stuff for sale, and you have prints and posters and t-shirts. Where do you go for getting your posters and prints done?
Well, the posters... I don't actually have any posters at the moment. I did have some mini posters that I did print on demand, and the results were fairly good, I thought. But the prints that I currently offer, I actually print those out on a Canon inkjet that I have of my own. It was like a $300 or $400 inkjet, and I think the results are fantastic.
What kind of paper do you use?
I use Canon Photo Paper Pro Platinum.
Okay.
It's fairly expensive. I mean, like a 13x19 sheet costs me about $2.50. Okay. And that's, you know, a little higher than I think a lot of people are willing to spend, but I feel like the color that you get out of that kind of paper, it's gorgeous. I mean, it looks really, really nice. Not to be all like, my comic looks gorgeous when it's printed out at 13x19, but it looks really good.
This is not Xerox paper in your $30 printer.
Right.
No.
So, I mean, you know, and I'm selling them for $15. I don't feel like skimping on the paper is something that I can justify. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really hard to tell how much the toner costs, you know. So I do think that the $15 price is reasonable. But and I'm also still, you know, kind of paying for the printer itself through that as well. The results are really nice, and there are I'm sure there's local printers that can do basically the same thing for a negligible markup, and you know. A lot of people, they might have like specific stocks, but if you take your own paper stock to them and you're like, I want 20 of these, whatever. If you can't just buy your own printer to print them out individually every time somebody orders, like I do, then you know, print out a small batch with a local company, and they'll probably be able to get exactly the same results, if not better. Because you know they might have an $800 printer.
Yeah. Or something. Well, like the other thing, if you find a local company that won't let you bring them paper stock, don't use them. There's other local companies.
Right.
Because that's obnoxious. I ran into one place that did that. They're like, "Well, no, we need you to buy our paper," and never mind. You know, walked out, found somebody else. It's not that hard. And then you know exactly what you're getting. So.
Mm-hmm. Paper, it really makes a huge difference. You know, you can skimp on one color things, clearly. You know, laser printer paper is not particularly great quality. But when it comes to, you know, full color, you need good paper in order to hold all that toner or ink or whatever.
Yeah, especially when you don't have black lines to hold it in. Sorry.
Sorry, I didn't understand that. There were two people talking.
Yeah. Go ahead. What?
Sorry, I was trying to make a joke.
Well, it wasn't funny because I didn't hear it.
That's fine. It was bad, I'm sure. So, yes,
anyway,
Tanya?
If you're going to put all this time and effort into your comic and then print it out on standard copy paper, you know, from your mom's inkjet, you're wasting your time at that point. Right. You know, what you have and what you see on the screen before you click print may be a work of art, but it's still going to look like crap on the other end. Put much effort into printing it that you put into doing it.
It's also very important to actually read a little bit about, especially if you're doing color prints, you have to read up a little bit on color management. Since I come from a print production background, you know, obviously I know a little bit about that, enough to know, how to convert the color that I've got in on the RGB comic into something that is actually going to look good in CMYK. It's tough to do and keep color accurate, but you know, once you have that print ready PDF file with the colors converted and everything, you just could keep reprinting that thing over and over.
You don't start in CMYK and then convert to RGB?
No, I don't. You can, because RGB has a wider color gamut,
mm-hmm.
And because it initially shows up on online, I feel like you can get better color online with using the RGB color gamut. And and actually, there's a big precedence for this. Lately, in the last 5 years or so, a lot of printing companies have been using RGB workflows, and that they only convert to CMYK at the very last minute. The only place that really presents a problem is is when you have like lettering or something like that.
Right.
The way I do that, and sorry if this is turning into more of a technical show than most of your other podcasts.
But, this is good.
The way I do that is anything that I want to print straight black, which is in my case only panel borders and lettering. If anything that I want to print straight black in my Illustrator file, I set it up as a spot color.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you print that, you set that spot color as an ink alias so that it changes it to 100% black. Or I might even try a rich black at some point. But again, when you print offset and you get, you know, something misaligned, the worst possible thing you can have is fuzzy text, because that makes the page unreadable. You know, even if the color is slightly off, like the registration on the color is slightly off, at least the black is still there and you can read everything and it's perfectly legible. But if you have, you know, if the lettering is all over cyan, magenta, yellow, and black, it just ruins the page.
Gotcha.
And I kind of went the other route where I'm having my colorist do it in CMYK, and I'm just telling people, hey, the color's kind of crap on the webcomic, you should probably buy the book where it's beautiful.
See,
the color in the multiplex book is definitely moved a little bit from the online version. Clearly, the reds that you get online,
bright greens,
just don't happen in the main.
See,
and because there's so much red in multiplex, it does look a little duller than there's so much red and brown in this book.
Right.
So there's a lot of
it's all red vests and brown walls in the movie theater, and I think I need to redecorate.
Have a bit of a design meeting, and
But there's nothing I can do. They're always in the same building. It's going to always be one color,
right?
So
in my comic, I constantly had. I never thought about printing because it was just some dumb hobby comic. But now I'm starting to practice for in the future, maybe or whatever. And then I realized, you know, some of the major things that I use in both Webcomic Beacon and in my main comic. My main comic had bright fuchsia for magic stuff. Oh, well, that doesn't exist in CMYK at all. So, like, god darn it. And then the Webcomic Beacon, well, it has this bright green glow in the logo. And it's like, god darn it. What the damn?
You know, and color is a pain in the ass.
It is.
Like, my comic, it's been running for 5 years. And I've noticed when I first got my laptop and I installed Windows on it, I have a MacBook Pro and I have Windows installed on it almost entirely so that I can play games. But it was actually pretty much the first time I had ever seen my comic in Windows, and I noticed that Angie who is supposed to have a purple streak in her hair has a blue streak in her hair.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell? Like,
you know, it's funny. I accidentally found that out because I run Windows all the time. And then I happened to be at a coffee shop and someone else there was using a Mac and we were referencing Multiplex. And they went to it and I'm like, wait a minute. And, you know, looking at both screens going, the colors are different. Why the hell are the colors different?
What is it supposed to be again?
It doesn't work that bad.
What is, what is it supposed to be again?
Angie's streak is supposed to be purple.
I see it as purple on mine.
Yeah. Do you have a Mac?
No, I run... Well, I'm on XP64 right now, but...
Okay, that might make a difference. I only have it on Windows 7, and I don't know. It could also have something to do with just the drivers for the Mac monitor. I'm sure it's a driver. So, I mean, it depends a lot on the driver, on whether or not you have your screen calibrated, because once I calibrated my screen, it was the right color again. But, you know, the vast majority of people don't calibrate their monitors.
Well, yeah, and it also depends on the laptop and what its graphic, you know, what its graphic card is and all of these different things.
More
which
technical.
Is, I think, part of why I went, screw it, just do it in CMYK, because... Meh. You know, it's going to be such an individual experience anyway. Let's do it the easy way so that we don't have to convert everything over. So
In comics where you've got the black line to hold everything together, I think it's less noticeable because, you know, if it's purple, if it's blue, it's still, it's there, you know.
It's
you
a color. Yeah.
Right. What was that, Mark?
I just started doing my comic in CYMK or CMYK or whatever. I was doing it in RGB. And actually, I like the way the colors look a lot more in CYMK.
CMYK.
CMYK. I like the way the colors turn out better in that.
Depends, too, on what kind of colors you're using in the comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm only using web-only colors when I go to color it in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Except if you're using bright fuchsia or bright green, maybe it doesn't.
Yes, I've avoided that.
that wouldn't quite work in Autumn Lake World to have these kind of like bright, eye-catching colors would seem out of place in this mellow world. Yeah,
the RGB seems almost a little more garish, I think.
Well, you can actually, even if you do color it in RGB and it's fairly garish, what you can do is you could kind of knock back the saturation a little bit.
Anyone who wants horrible examples of what it looks like when you don't knock back the saturation, if you just go to Daisies and Shit Now, go back in the archives to say, I don't know, the first 80 strips. Now, I think it's about 60 when all of a sudden I realize, okay, wait a minute, I'm blinding people. I should stop that. And pulled back the saturation.
Are you updating now? Are you...
No, October.
Okay,
October. Well, this is gonna be a long episode again. Hang on, I need to add more.
Long episode.
I need to add more space.
Well, this is good information.
It is good information.
Get off track into crap that nobody will ever use. This is great.
I know, but I gotta add more time. Hang on.
Love information like this.
But we're not talking about movies.
We're practically out of time for talking about movies in general. There's been so much information, but I wanted, before we go to our next break, I wanted to say, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, printing and everything, but we actually haven't talked about your comic. Like, what happens in it? So can you give us a, like, tell us about what Multiplex is.
For those of you who have actually listened to this whole show so far and have no idea what Multiplex is about, it's about a bunch of kids that work in a movie theater. And it centers largely on Jason, who's kind of a dry, cynical asshole and a bit of a film snob, and his friend Kurt, who's a little bit more lowbrow big horror movie buff, and he's not especially mature, but somehow managed to be a manager of the movie theater. But Anyway, it centers largely on those two, and it's kind of a slice of life comic, but it also covers, you know, so there's some like teen drama and whatnot, but it also, you know, they talk about movies, and make fun of movies, and you know, the strip, it's as much about movies as like the standard movie themed pop culture gag a day comic, except that I try to also, you know, have them discuss movies in a more serious way, so that it's not just, you know, movie jokes, but it's also about movies in general and about how we talk about movies and how, you know, the movies that we like or hate you know, say something about us.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how we watch movies, you know, other customers that drive us insane while we're watching movies.
it's
about every aspect of the movie going experience, with the possible exception of home video.
So. Yeah. And I have to say, one of my favorite things about Multiplex is that juxtaposition between the two characters, one who's very snobbish about it and one who isn't. Lard really, really isn't. Because it's instantaneously relatable to so many people. I am the movie snob in my group. If I watch 100 movies, I'll think 2 of them aren't worth slitting my wrists over. And then, you know, I have Steven who watches Van Damme movies with a smile on his face. So,
although I will give him this, what was the last one? JCVD was awesome. And I'm not a big dumb action movie guy. It's not a big dumb action movie. There's actually a scene in the movie where Jean-Claude Van Damme got me a little teary because it's so good. You have to see it. It's not an action movie either, really. I mean, there's a couple of action moments in it, but he's playing off of his public persona in it, and he does it so well. He's so well used in this movie. Clearly, it's typecasting, but it's so, because it's him. He's so well used in this movie. It was jaw dropping. Like the reviews that I'd read, you know, got me to expect it to be pretty good. And I went in, and I was like, wow, this is a great movie. Check that one out with Steve, your boyfriend. I don't know,
husbandish.
Husbandish. Okay, with your husbandish. Grant JCVD. It's a great...
Okay.
You might not like it as much.
You probably just made his week.
The thing is, clearly, anybody that knows me thinks that Jason is just me. And he's an exaggerated version of me about 15 years ago. You know, I was a little more chip on my shoulder, you know, and I wouldn't say that I'm anywhere near Kurt, but I've kind of mellowed out a little bit, and in some ways that's actually Jason's character arc over the next, you know, several years, is that he needs to lighten up
just a little.
Yeah, I mean it's just a little though, because, you know, there's a difference between lightening up and liking crap movies.
Yes, and I think most of the time I'm very much like Jason, but I have this soft spot for really bad old B movies, Vincent Price and the Creature Features and things. I have this soft spot for those. So and I get a lot of hell for that, for, you know, just lambasting, you know, this major hit that everyone loved in the theaters, and I'm crying and screaming and wanting out, and then I'll
Phenomenal.
Go home. Yeah, and then I'll go home and be like, yes, House on Haunted Hill is on. I've only seen this 37 times. And
what do you think of remakes? What do you think of this trend for remakes?
I think they're overdone. I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with the remake. I've seen great remakes. The Departed is a fantastic remake. You know, but, you know, there are not very many of them that are different enough to be considered good in their own right, and very, very few that are actually better than the original.
Manchurian Candidate.
I haven't seen the remake of that one.
It's okay. And Meryl Streep, my God, she channels Angela Lansbury. She swears she wasn't trying to, but yeah, she did. But it's not as good as the original one by a long chalk, but it's worth watching.
I bet the action scenes are better than the original, though.
The other thing that it does, it does bring to a new audience these movies, and the older movies do get rediscovered.
Yeah, I don't.
I think it depends.
Like, I don't think that's much of a reason for a whole movie to exist, especially
the
when
day the Earth stood still.
I'm just trying to say it's not all bad comes out of it. I mean, if it's bad, I mean, it usually can bring the old movie back to light, especially for people that have never even heard of it before.
Oh, like the one I just mentioned, House on Haunted Hill. If you've seen the bright color version of House on Haunted Hill with the screechy ghosts and things, you have no idea what the original one was about. I mean, no idea at all. It's an entirely different movie.
I did like... You know, that was a Steven Spielberg remake, right?
Yeah, I think so.
See, I was actually kind of liking the movie until you saw the ghost. And then I was like, this is stupid. You know,
I like the ghost. I like the screechy ghost.
What?
I thought it was... I mean, it's still kind of a fun movie, but the original Vincent Price is better. It's an original Vincent Price. It's very kind of over the top, and there's skeletons with strings. And
William
Castle.
I'm thinking of a completely different one then.
Oh.
Never mind.
War of the Worlds.
I'm thinking of The Haunting.
Yeah, War of the Worlds. There's a difference between a remake and a rewrite.
Or a reimagining.
I think,
right.
I prefer ones that were remade versus ones
I don't really think
because
there's
anything
wrong
with... Because I think oftentimes what they do is they dumb it down or they try to...
sex it up or dumb it down.
When people go back and readapt a book, that doesn't bother me as much as when they very clearly are remaking the first adaptation of a book.
Psycho.
Like the Coen brothers are doing another version of True Grit, and you know the original is by all accounts a classic. I think it's John Ford. It's a John Wayne movie anyway, and but it's not really that faithful in some respects to the original book, from what I've heard anyway. I haven't read it. The Coen brothers doing it, I feel like they can do something different enough from the original version that, you know, you can take it in its own respects.
All right. Well, we have to take a break. And when we come back, we got some advertisements. You know, those things you see before a movie. And we'll be right back. You know that we can simulate your fingertips. Rearrange any part that doesn't fit. Don't stop, don't lick my ear. You're not allowed to disappear. That was In the Movies by Greg Anisek at musicalley.com by Mevio.
Okay.
See, I can see a multiplex now where you do like a 3D movie and like everything on the screen is like not flat vector graphics, but 3D with shading.
That would be really. That would actually be kind of campy, cool.
It's 3D.
There's I would love to do a 3D comic. I don't know how the hell you would pull that off, though.
Well, you need.
David Wolf of Paranoia High did an old time 3D comic, the actual, like, where you put on the red and green glasses. Mm-hmm. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
I have a few of those. I haven't made one in a long time, though.
Yeah.
So look up Paranoia High, and he does a 3D comic, and it's just lovely.
Well, you should be able to do, you know, they're starting to make 3D capable TVs and everything, you know, they're probably going to be 3D monitors and, right. You know, that's just how things are going. You know, when it comes to 3D, you know, I like it when it's not the main focus, and it's subtle.
Reason to throw things at you.
Well, it's like, I remember seeing How to Train Your Dragon. I have yet to see a movie in 3D. I had no idea it was in 3D, and when I watched it, I didn't feel like it was in 3D. Versus, I did see Journey to the Center of the Earth with Brandon Fraser, and I was like, oh my god, this is supposed to be in 3D, wasn't it? He's like holding stuff like way out to the camera. I was like, what the fuck is this?
Coraline was pretty good that way. It was immersive rather than...
I felt... The three best movies, as far as usage of 3D, in my opinion, are How to Train Your Dragon, Avatar, and Coraline, actually. Although, I'm not that in love with Coraline as a movie. It's very good, but it's not fantastic. It's visually fantastic, though, definitely. But I felt like the use of 3D in there wasn't as show-offy as a lot of other usages. I felt Avatar made it absolutely immersive. It's pretty much the only reason that I could enjoy the movie. It's so derivative. I mean, and to me, it's not... I really liked the movie on the whole. You know, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, it's Dances with Wolves all over again. I have to hate it. But, you know, it really is Dances with Wolves all over again. So, you know, so...
Pocahontas in space.
Right, exactly. And it totally is that, but I still enjoyed it for what it was. But How to Train Your Dragon, I think, was... probably the best use of 3D I've ever seen in a movie. It was subtle, except, you know, in the flying scenes, it's so well used because it really does add a lot to it. And, you know, I'd read a couple of people say that they felt that the use of 3D in that movie was gimmicky, which I just don't get because, I mean, I can't remember what movie it was. It was Monsters, Inc. I watched Monsters, Inc.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago with my girlfriend, and that movie was clearly not in 3D, but there were definitely shots in it where they're kind of in that, you know, that first person kind of you're in the movement thing, you know, especially in the door sequence at the end where they're kind of whipping around on the rails with the doors. You know, absolutely. If that movie was shot, it was released in 3D, people would say, oh, that's gimmick. But it wasn't 3D. People have used these shots forever. You know, it brings you into the moment, and I think that you accentuate that with 3D film. It's just when they start throwing shit at you that you're like, okay.
Piranha 3D is we all know what that's for. You know, it's a gimmicky, you know, kind of cheesy thing to do.
But boobs
and then you have movies like Up, where I think Up was more. I think it was there to enhance things visually more than it was to really bring you to the action. And I think there's different ways to use 3D. And I don't think we're going to get as many criticisms of the use of 3D when we don't have to wear the glasses anymore.
Yeah, that I think will take a massive change in technology to pull that off, at least in movie theaters.
Yeah.
That's...
But at that point, I think you stop hearing people bitch when 3D's done in a subtle way.
Yeah, subtle is key.
It's unnecessary.
I'm getting a little looping here, guys.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Maybe not.
Quick, go ahead to Adverse.
All right. So right now, we have to take a look at the website to see who's advertising on the Webcomic Beacon. And that's at webcomicbeacon.com. We have three spots for Project Wonderful advertisers to look at. And right now, at our first top part, we have the Action Flick Chick is advertising. And that is going to be at actionflickchick.com/superaction. And let's see here. The other two are general, like, anime advertisements, which we're seeing a lot these days. But, you know, I still appreciate their stuff, you know. And this week, from the Rampage Network website, hosting and community site at rampagenetwork.com, this episode is brought to you in part by Billy the Dunce at duncepress.com. Well, that's what it is.
So there.
And I'm kind of randomly picking these so that our sponsorship spot, which is available for purchase at webcomicbeacon.com/advertise, to keep filling that spot with something viable and increasing the value of that spot, because, you know, it helps us, especially, you know, getting to conventions and such, and PenguinCon, and things like that. Remember, PenguinCon next year will be there.
April, I think, isn't it?
It's on the cusp of 2 months, I think, April and May. So
yes. Yeah.
So in any case, so those are our sponsors. And I think, let me check the email real quick to see what we have for milestones. Yes. Demon Eater of DemonEater.com has hit 400 comics. So congratulations on that, Jilly. And that is all we have on here.
Oh, no. There's another one.
Oh, what is it?
School Spirit, 900 comics.
Wow.
Excellent.
Entertainment and a history lesson, all rolled into one.
Yeah, schoolspiritcomic.com.
And I could say Multiplex 500, which would be like a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't mention it. But he's on the show already, so, you know.
It's okay. I'll get over it.
It's still quite an accomplishment.
Oh, it is, you know.
It's exciting.
And a hero, you have a book out.
On the 22nd, it is currently available for pre-order, but it'll actually be available on September 22nd.
Yeah. Excellent.
And hey, webcomic readers, who lame webcomic readers, not the good ones that I know are listening right now, but the other ones, lame webcomic readers, get this out there. If you're going to bitch because your favorite webcomic artist won't put out a book, it's because you twats aren't out there pre-ordering the books that are already available.
It's true.
If you want the book from other ones, you have to support the other comics that you read as well by doing the pre-orders. That's what gives us the encouragement to print things.
Yes.
And buy stuff from my store.
And buy stuff from Mark. For goodness sake.
Yeah, we still have a few of Mark's t-shirts left over here, as well as Webcomic Beacon t-shirts. And
got no shame.
Shame is for losers.
I've been in this game too long for shame.
We're all proper whores. Okay.
Proper whores. No, we would get money if we were proper whores.
Oh, sorry.
Let's see. Okay, so we need to spend some time talking about movies. And one movie that we really need to mention, even though it's not a webcomic, it is... I have not read it, but I loved the movie! It was awesome! And I only gave it an A-minus because I didn't buy the chemistry between Ramona and Scott. But overall, one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
No way.
Yes.
I was dodging. I wasn't sure if I was going to go see it, but if you say, well, actually, you've said some other movies were really good that I thought were utter crap, so maybe I should take your word for it. Let's go to the expert.
So, Gordon, you actually had the creator of the comic give you a quote for the back of your book.
Yep. Brian Lee O'Malley... And I guess we first started talking when I interviewed him for Comic Book Galaxy a number of years ago. And I mean, I wouldn't say we're anything better than internet acquaintances, but you know, he's a really nice guy, and he was kind enough to give me a quote some time ago about the strip, and I asked him again if I could you know, use it on the back cover of the book, and he was totally cool with that. So yeah, I have a quote from him on the back cover. I really enjoyed the movie. I have to say that when I saw it, my experience of the movie was ruined a little bit by the fact that the sound in the movie theater was jacked. I watched Scott Pilgrim, which is the greatest rock and roll action movie ever made, in mono.
Oh no!
The THX is gone.
All of the sound was coming from the front of the screen. It pissed me off the entire time I watched the movie. But and so I can't really say that I think I might have enjoyed it more if the sound was actually working. And the soundtrack is great. I own both of the soundtracks as well.
You should have gotten a complaint and gotten a whole new ticket. I didn't get
the chance to see a second show because we had someplace to be, and okay. So
we were gonna go see it at the drive-in. So now I'm kind of rethinking that.
Yeah,
as an option.
You want to see it in some place with a good sound system. Okay. Really,
I saw it three
because
times.
The music
already
in it is terrific. There, you know, Beck does a couple of songs for it. Metric does one song, which is awesome. you know, and the soundtrack itself, like the score. That is by Nigel Godrich, the longtime producer of Radiohead. It's a fantastic score. I've compared it to the Dust Brothers Fight Club score. Although
awesome.
there's a different vibe to it, really, but it's used similarly. So it's hard to say exactly how they're similar, but it just reminded me of that.
It's interesting you say that because, you know, I was trying to think because, you know, Scott Pilgrim, when I first saw this, I've seen it three times. But it does something new for movies. It gives us a different presentation, a very good incorporation of comic kind of narration techniques, mm-hmm. and also the musical aspect. The second or third time I realized of how musical this movie is, and it's something I didn't quite pick up right away because it's so integrated. But you know, I started thinking about, you know, Fight Club was like one of those movies where it just came out and did things differently. Its narration was totally different. Little camera tricks or right. film techniques, you know, it was just somebody actually pushing, you know, something different.
Yeah, Fight Club really, I think, pushed the language of modern movies forward in a similar way that The Matrix did, but a little less, you know, maybe a little less obviously. It's still fairly gimmicky, but it works in it because of, you know, the nature of the story and all of that. And I think Scott Pilgrim does a lot of things differently enough that it's kind of pushing it forward just a little bit as well. I mean, it's a really fun action movie. I do feel like it maybe had an extra ending in there tacked on. But it was still really good. I mean, you know, the portion of the movie where they're sort of touching on, you know, what would be volume 7 is very different from the original, partly because, you know, Brian Lee O'Malley was probably still writing it at the
when
time
they were
while they were filming it or while they were writing their own script. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely a fantastic, you know, condensed version of all 7 volumes.
Okay, now when you say an extra ending, do you mean Stephen King crap double ending, or do you mean?
No. I mean, I just feel like it's a little tiny bit drawn. Like, you know, but at the same time, I kind of felt like it also worked like the ending of a video game that way, where, like, you know, the guy dies, but then he's not really dead. You have to fight him one more time, and that kind of thing. I mean, it reminded me of Legend of Zelda that way, actually.
Well, that's, you know, typical, you know, there's usually, it's like, that's Mega Man, you know?
Right. And that, you know, and so it was perfectly appropriate, and maybe it's just the fact that I, you know, I'm not a huge gamer, that it didn't occur to me immediately when I was like, man, again?
Didn't we just do that? Okay.
It made sense. I think I got it right.
It's not the ridiculous, like, we've already had the climax. It levels out. You think everything's going to be okay. Way back up again for no apparent reason. It had purpose.
It does have purpose.
Okay.
You know, it certainly didn't ruin the movie for me by any stretch of the means.
I don't know why people didn't go see this movie. I mean, the hype was tremendous. The reviews were tremendous. And yet people went to go see The Expendables and Eat, Pray, Love. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you people?
You know,
people are stupid.
It'll do great on DVD.
I think a lot of it is people are kind of bored with Michael Cera doing the same sort of thing every movie. And he is doing something different in this.
He is. And I actually really liked him in this movie, which was weird. I actually had respect to him for his role in this. He actually expands.
Maybe people see Michael Cera, think nerd, and then just don't want to go.
No, like, they just think, oh, another goddamn Michael Cera, a movie with Michael Cera in it. Like another... you know, like all those people that get typecast and then they're like in a bunch of movies for a while and then they disappear.
Right. I think they could have maybe played up the action movie aspect a little more because it is such an effective action movie. But I don't know. I won't say it's just because it's mismarketed or anything like that.
I would say it's mismarketed.
You know, it's whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't think that the box office matters so much because it is profitable. Slimly, perhaps, but, you know, just barely profitable. And because it is as good as it is, it'll find an audience on DVD, like, no questions asked. I mean,
it'll have longevity versus that big burst at the beginning.
Right. Expendables, people will probably forget about it in 5 years. I haven't seen it. I really enjoyed the last Rambo movie. Like, really enjoyed the last Rambo movie as, you know, a dumb guy action flick.
Okay, I was like, wait a minute.
No,
now
I would not recommend it to you.
I was disappointed with the Expendables. The editing was way too damn quick, and the explosions at the end, at the very end, for those who've seen it know what I'm talking about, I was very disappointed. I wanted to see huge, grandiose explosions from at least three different angles in succession, and I didn't get that. And the explosion blasts were too quick. They're edited out, and I was very disappointed. In fact, right after I saw this with Melissa, Scott Pilgrim was like right after it, so we missed like the first 3 minutes, like, of it actually from the Universal thing. We missed like the first 3-4 minutes, and I ran up to get tickets, and I ran back, and then we got to see. So I ended my movie evening with a double feature and on a great note. So,
yeah, if you can't even get the explosions right, I'm gonna skip it. Oh wait, no, I was gonna skip it anyway. But yeah.
I'm willing to bet that it was probably heavily edited for time. You'll find a lot of deleted stuff probably on the...
It was edited to make it look like, oh, wait, these people aren't old. They can do that. Totally.
Jet Li can still kick ass. Don't say anything bad about Jet Li.
I wouldn't go up against him.
No. Jet Li, I'm still going for... I think most movies are lucky, are thrilled that I'm not an editor. if I were to cut out all the bad bits, it would be short features every night. Yeah. You'd get to see 40, 50 movies in a sitting. I really hate movies most of the time.
I got the sense with Inception that was condensed. You know, like there's missing stuff.
Inception.
I would be surprised if there's much in the way of deleted scenes with that.
I really like that movie, but...
Chris Nolan seems to shoot the movie that he wants. And, I mean, the movie was pretty long, you know. I think it just moved forward at a brisk pace. I don't know.
I heard rumors that they actually... that they did a little editing for for bits that got a little too surreal. And... which, I haven't seen it. I have no idea if the rumors are true, if it seems that way. But I still have... The reason I'm going to go see Inception is that the reviews I got back from just general people seem to be split into two camps. And the intellectual people that I like being around on any given day seem to really enjoy it, and it caused a lot of discussion, whereas the people that I find vapid and annoying thought it was stupid and didn't understand what was going on. So I went, oh, okay, I'm going to buy a ticket.
It kind of has a Matrix vibe to it. The whole They spend a lot of time like in warehouses and stuff, you know, somewhere.
But it has this sort of alternate reality kind of thing going. Now, let's be clear. When we say a Matrix vibe, we mean the first one, right? Because again, by three, I was slipping my wrist.
Inception is a good movie. I don't personally understand the amount of discussion that's placed on it, or that occurs about it, because I don't think it's really that smart or that deep. I don't think it's a complicated story by any means. I take it very much at face value. You know, the characters are practically explaining the movie in every scene. So I don't know what's so hard to follow about it if you just pay attention.
That would probably be the problem.
But that's the problem for a lot of
paying attention. That you know, popcorn probably is really distracting.
The people who would like twinkly vampires probably aren't going to be turned on to a film like that.
And you know what? They were very much the Edward Jacob arguing kind of fan base that didn't like the movie. And anymore, I'm using that as.
Are you on Team Edward or Team Jacob or?
If someone can answer that,
I'm answering. I'm on Team Blade.
Team Blade.
Yeah. Jacob and Edward don't have a chance, and neither
I'm on
does Bella.
Team Edward James Olmos. That's a little shout out to Hijinks and Sue by the teacher.
Nice. I like that. Hijinks and Sue deserves a little shout out. That's good. Yeah, if anyone answers that question with either Edward or Jacob, I then ask them what other movies they've seen that they like and just put those on the don't bother list. It takes a lot of time trying to figure things out. But, you know, and I do appreciate movies. Well, I mean, Fight Club, again, was very base. I mean, I don't think there was anything, you know, difficult about the movie. They did explain what was going on, even little twist in the end. You know, you got that explained to you. So it wasn't difficult to follow. But that still, you know, brought about a lot of intellectual discussion amongst my friends about, you know, kind of the nature of man and God. And,
End of Titanic?
Titanic, there's so many people. Well, what happened to the old lady? What happened? I don't understand.
Say, for the record, I hated Titanic. I hated every miserable fucking moment. I had to sit in front of that screen. I wanted everyone to die. And not typically that violent.
No one
like the old lady.
No, one little whiny bitch lived. I just wanted everyone to eat it.
The thing for me with Titanic, I have to admit, the thing for me is you've got this young guy and this young chick, and they're running around this ship, which is the grandest luxury liner on the face of the earth. And where do they choose to have their makeout session? Backseat of a car.
I thought that was hilarious. Probably unintentionally, but hey.
You know what? If it hadn't been unintentional, really hilarious, I may have liked the movie. If I could have caught a wink here and there of them going, I can't believe you're taking this seriously. My brother and I laughed through the ending. We watched people drowning and just laughed. We've never been so happy to see people end.
And yet, people are still talking about it 15 years later.
I wonder if you cut out all the DiCaprio and what's-her-face, cut most of that out, and then it's mostly a story about the Titanic. It's great.
And I'm probably interested in caring. Now, I don't share your distaste for DiCaprio, though, because of What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Exactly. That's
to me, it was an amazing movie.
He's great in it.
Well, he always did a really good job, though, but he is like one of those people where it's like he was like in everything, and then people were kind of getting sick of him, and also jealous of him, because, you know, he was a pretty good-looking dude, you know?
It's getting a little bloated these days.
He's older, too, but...
Sure.
Well, and he's older than he looks, which is part of the issue. Nobody expects, you know... Yeah.
Looks a bit like Rick Schroeder these days.
It does a little.
Ricky Schroeder, who's old. It's like,
But anyone who has issues with DiCaprio's acting should watch What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
I I actually
but,
like
you know,
Romeo
he is,
and Juliet.
He is going the full retard in that one.
Never go,
yes, he is.
Never go full
and
retard.
But he does it so convincingly. And what's interesting, I'm going to let it go. I'm just moving on. They never actually tell you what his disability is. However,
I'm disabled.
Well, no, because I'm going somewhere serious here.
I'm sorry.
My son is autistic, and I know a number of families who have, you know, either autistic children or children with various mental delays, and it's spot fucking on. He did a really good job. You see, I mean, even just little subtle things that I think ordinarily people would miss. Anyone who's had experience with people who have those type of neurological disabilities, it was right there. He did a great job.
Until I had seen him in a few other movies where I thought he was actually a pretty decent actor, I used to say that him as the... I really don't like the word retarded, but I have to in this case. Well, him as the retarded guy was just typecasting.
I did really like Romeo and Juliet, and
I like
and
that too.
That was fun.
I like that picture. Some people hate it, but
I hate it.
I thought it was fun.
I do have to say that the best moment for that picture wasn't in the picture, but at the end of the picture. It's Romeo and Juliet, so I'm not giving anything away if you haven't
yeah.
seen it. It's where the picture ends, and there were like these teenagers in there to see DiCaprio and whatever. And the picture ends, and they get up and they kind of walk out with their heads hung. Oh, that wasn't romantic. They both died. Oh.
They're looking for the happy American bow on the end of Romeo and Juliet. They deserve it. That's what they got.
But I did think it was clever. It was, I mean, I guess Richard III, they've done that sort of put it in a different time period.
Yeah. Right. So, and I don't find that a problem. With putting it in a different time zone, or the fact that they didn't update the language in order to do that. What bugged me was that, except for Pete Postlethwaite, who was the priest, I guess, or maybe the apothecary. Anyway, he's a experienced Shakespearean actor. With the exception of him, I didn't get the impression that any of the actors understood the words coming out of their mouths.
That's true.
I did notice a bit of a disconnect there, yeah.
Was it Brian Keith, who played the father, or Brian Dennehy, or Brian Keith? I always mix them up.
And also the fact that they had to spoon feed you things like that the swords were actually pistols.
Hand me my long sword.
I thought that was clever. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, by putting it on the side of the gun. Yeah, I thought,
thanks.
Oh, they think I'm
really?
Stupid.
Well, you know, it's like a Beretta is going to have Beretta on the side of it, you know. Desert Eagle has Desert Eagle on this, you know.
Guns are labeled.
That's a bit of a stretch, though.
There did seem to be a little bit of a disconnect between what they were saying and what
right.
what they were saying.
No, I mean, there's one line. I can't remember exactly what it is at the moment because it's like 10 years later. But there's one line in particular that I think it's John Leguizamo or the other guy mm-hmm. that looks like him. he's like spitting some words out venomously. But if you actually pay attention to the line, it's a joke.
Yeah.
It's just making fun
funny.
Of the guy.
Yeah.
And it's just like you really don't know what you're saying. Yeah.
I did catch a couple moments like that where wait a minute, no, you're poking fun there. You're not mad. Wait, what? Or some of the familiar relations broke down a little bit here and there.
Alrighty.
I did think it was a clever update. The other one, though, that was, I think, much better as far as a clever update is "O Brother, Where Art Thou?" And that was one hell of an update, I mean, from the Odyssey. So, and that was maybe a little too well done because the number of people I've spoke to who had no idea that it was based on the Odyssey.
Yeah, I, you know, obviously there are things like the Siren and the Cyclops and whatnot, but right. beyond that, I really didn't quite pick up on the similarities. It's probably because I haven't read the Odyssey, except for the excerpts from high school.
That would be Yeah, well, and you also have the fact that he's trying to get back home to his wife, who's, you know, being prepared for marriage to somebody else. And there were a lot of really good similarities. And the sirens, I thought that was my favorite part.
I'm not a fop. I'm a Dapper Dan man.
Yeah.
Alrighty. The Coens can do very little wrong, but when they do go wrong, they go wrong.
Give us an interesting
their last picture. What was it? A Simple Man? Was their last picture?
I can't remember.
A Simple Man, I think. Richard Kind's in it, and you know, I really liked that one. It was really interesting. Although I've heard people just tear it apart, just hate
a serious
it.
Man. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was fantastic, but I enjoyed it. I liked the ending as well. Let's see. Burn After Reading, I thought it ended well, but it was a little frustrating. I understand Lady Killers is terrible. Haven't seen it.
Yeah, I was going to skip that one too.
I mean, that's really about it. Is Lady Killers and possibly Intolerable Cruelty.
That's not a bad scorecard, though.
I mean, every movie of theirs that I have seen, I think is worth seeing. If not, you know, fantastic. I loved No Country for Old Men, even though the ending was very abrupt, and it sort of took me off guard. I was like, what? okay, I could buy that as an ending.
Okay, we gotta wrap this up. But I do want to bring up one last movie that's not out just yet, but I will see just because of how much of an anti-movie it is for 3D. I mean, the trailer says it all. When it starts up, it says that when people are saying that 3D is going to be the next biggest thing, I bet they didn't have this movie in mind. Jackass in 3D. I have to see it just as a statement.
Where every hair on Bam's ass is right in your face. Awesome.
What kind of statement are you trying to make by going and seeing that?
You know,
because it's such an anti-statement of a movie. You know,
as Jackass is, they're really funny.
Yeah, they're really funny.
So incredibly stupid, but you know.
Now
I mean,
will say it bothers me that Johnny Knoxville is a father. Okay, the fact that that right there is an issue for me. Somebody allowed him to breed, and that is. I'm actually amazed that he was capable of breeding. His balls of
taking. Probably the only thing he is seriously capable of.
I would almost rather see a Michael Bay movie.
No. Michael Bay movie isn't going to be as hilarious.
A Michael Bay movie starring Nick Cage.
Oh, God.
Okay, here. I
would almost be willing to go to that instead.
Here's one good thing about something like Jackass, and I didn't realize this until later. You know, you can go to a movie theater and see a movie as like a social event. I mean, as far as if you go to Jackass and you go see this, especially on opening night, the crowd that's going to be there, this is the awesomest type of crowd because everyone's going to be laughing their ass off together, and that is something that you can't do so often. Not even at home at your house in the living room. Something like that. That whole experience is just something that's just amazing. When you can, in any movie where everybody jumps at the same time, everyone gasps at the same time, everyone chuckles and laughs at the same time at the little joke that was in there. Those are some of my favorite moments of being in a theater.
Now, see, for social interaction, what I typically do, especially for a movie like Jackass, fun movies where there's a lot of that social component, I always wait until it comes out in the dollar theaters. And in Pueblo, there was one specific dollar theater that was perfect. And, you know, you'd show up and just the whole audience is just obnoxious. And it, in movies where it's just fun, it really adds to it to have people adding their own laugh tracks, their own jokes and things back and forth. And it becomes this big event. It's like a party.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. Stupid movies are for dollar theater.
Okay. Actually, I do have one more thing. I have to add more time. Hang on. I had to add more time because I just realized, okay, in multiplex, a lot of times you'll have the main cast, you know, as apparently a multiplex has freedom for their workers to dress up and do stuff, I guess, whether or not they're supposed to or not.
Right.
Might there be, you know, maybe a small plot where they start doing jackass pranks with each other because the movie's coming out?
I think they kind of already do to some extent.
some small extent.
They tend to be more about the horror movies, but you can, I don't know, depending on when the movie comes out, it might happen. There are things that I've wanted to do that are fairly jackass inspired, I suppose. but there's an element of I don't know. It's hard to say. There are some things that don't really work in a comic strip in the sense that, like, yeah, that might be funny if it actually happened, but if it's just, you know, showing, you know, for instance, if I had a gigantic hand whip around a corner and smack somebody in the face in the comic strip, it'd just be like, okay, maybe, I guess.
What?
Yeah, I mean,
physical humor is hard in comic form.
I'm not so sure that the physical, like, slapstick sort of humor works.
Animated GIF.
It could absolutely work. You know, I don't have enough time to animate the comic. I would love for some skilled Flash animator to come along and work with me on one, though. It could work in certain mediums. Yeah. Better than others. I'm just not convinced that comics is one of them.
Well, typically in comics you end up with aftermath jokes more than you do current action jokes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, already. So, well, this show is kind of meant to talk about movies a lot more than this, but instead you got a lot of useful information about printing your comic. But so hopefully it's not all bad. but we do have to sign off right here. Gordon, you could probably guess what we're doing, and you can chime in at the end. This has been Festworks of Festworks.com.
This is Tanya of DaisiesAndShit.com.
And this is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
And I do Multiplex.
Well, all right. Gordon of MultiplexComic.com, thank you for coming on this show. It was really great and informative, and we had a lot of fun.
Same here.
Awesome. All right. And on the 19th of September, be sure to come back. We have DJ Kaufman. He's going to be on the show, and we're going to be talking about lots of stuff. So see you there, and thanks for coming. Well, actually, sorry, the chat room did crash. So thanks for coming for the first 10 minutes. And hopefully we'll get that fixed for next time at webcomicbeacon.com/live.
That's all for now. Tune in next time at webcomicbeacon.com.
He won't ever come on our show, so
so you have to talk about him vicariously.
He won't care to come on the Webcomic Beacon. You know, some of those bigger guys are too important to be on our show.
Is that a fat joke? I can't believe it.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm sorry.